in the Alaska House. Representative Vance has a bill to reopen the fishery, or to reopen the waters instead of restricting them. But also, I heard from Willie Dunn, Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly member, who reminded us that the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly unanimously passed a resolution to oppose closing the federal waters of Cook Inlet. And I have 2 minutes that I'm going to play here now from Homer Mayor Ken Kastner's mayor's report that was on to the city council on Monday night about the actions that he's attempting to take. And then I've got Christy Fry on the line. So hold tight, Christy Fry. I will be with you in 2 minutes. First, here's Mayor Ken Kastner speaking to Homer City Council during his mayor's report on Monday night.
2 weeks ago, I was late getting to a meeting, a council committee of the whole meeting, because I was supposed to have a one-on-one conversation with Governor Dunleavy about Cook Inlet fishing things. And we fulfilled that conversation last Thursday. And it was a 40-minute conversation. Mayor Brian Gabriel from Kenai joined in. And both of us, again, expressed our dismay about the North Pacific Management Council's actions on closing Lower Cook Inlet to commercial fishing. And we also talked about, when it was my turn, I also talked about other things that were that I was feeling, I used the word sullied this time, about the closing of DMV, the closing of Tutka, and I always touch on the ferries because I think our intercoastal dependency is really important. And he didn't have an awful lot to say. He has a very aggressive agenda for expanding natural resource extraction. And so he does have some sympathy for our expansion of the port. We talked a little bit about the port expansion, but mostly it was about the fishing issues. And Mayor Gabriel was there to especially talk about the management plan that puts about $3 million worth of excess salmon up the Kenai River without being harvested. Going forward, it appears like the other two mayors from the Kenai Peninsula are willing to sign on to a joint letter from the four mayors and write to the Secretary of Commerce asking him to take his time in approving the council's closure.
And that's Mayor Kastner addressing Homer City Council on Monday night. I have some more emails piling up that I'll get some questions. I'll have a question for Bob here in just a few minutes. But first, I want to go to Christy Fry. If you're there, are you there, Christy?
Yeah. Hey, Kathleen. How's it going?
Hey, good morning. I spoke to you briefly yesterday and found that the lease sales and subsequent and restriction of fishing, it has changed the way you fish. You're a member of USITA, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And how is it changing the way that you fish?
Well, basically what it led to is me selling my permit. So, I just didn't see a future in this fishery. They've taken it away from us. Every single board cycle, they take something away. You know, we've never gotten anything back, and it just keeps going and going. And then you get a situation like last year where they let 2.5 million sockeye salmon over and above the necessary escapement level, over and above that, go up to Kasilof and the Kenai. And, you know, it's such a wasted resource. And, you know, unless we can, you know, if we could have gotten the feds to help manage it, we would have had a chance, but we don't.
Okay. I thanks so much for your input. It's really good for people to hear from the people who are affected by all of this. I do have, thanks, Christy. And I do have a question. I think I want to bring Bob Shavelson and Josh Wisniewski back into the conversation. This is from Chuck Lindsay. I'm an Upper Cook Inlet salmon drift fisherman. I'm really unhappy about the recent NPFMC decision and also concerned about oil and gas development in Cook Inlet. Not to play devil's advocate, but haven't these lease sales in the EEZ and Upper Cook Inlet occurred in the past, and isn't there usually little interest from the oil industry? So, Bob Shavelson, can you respond to that?
Sure. And there have been a number of lease sales in Lower Cook Inlet in the past, and there hasn't been a lot of interest until several years ago. And that's when Hilcorp bid on and secured several leases in Lower Cook Inlet. And as Josh alluded to earlier, Hilcorp came in last year with a gigantic, you know, 600-foot-plus seismic vessel. And they came in and they were blasting these seismic air guns, which are, you know, these underwater acoustic, basically cannons that are firing these loud percussions, you know, every several seconds, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until they're done. And the thing that really stood out there is that neither Hilcorp or the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management did anything to understand what the implications of that heavy noise was on the environment. And, you know, there's an increasing array of studies that show that percussive noise, those huge explosions, which some researchers compared, you know, only to warfare as being as loud. There's an increasing number of studies that show that they can blast apart the plankton at the base of the food chain. They disrupt fish hearing and other sensory parts of the fish, and they certainly disrupt whales. So there was no effort at all to understand what the implications were before they started this several-month process of blasting in Lower Cook Inlet. So from our perspective, that's just indicative of their attitude. They're not going to really look. As I mentioned before, they spit out an environmental impact statement in 3 months. That's record time. They clearly don't care what the implications are for this development. So it's up to us to say, does it make sense to toss away renewable and sustainable economic activity like salmon fishing in favor of one-time non-renewable extractive use of oil and gas when, in fact, Alaska is suffering the effects of climate change unlike any other state in the lower 48.
Thanks, Bob Shavelson. And the second part of this question from Chuck Lindsay, as much as I'd like to say there is a connection between the state of Alaska wanting to restrict drifters in Cook Inlet, do we have evidence that the state of Alaska fishing is working in concert with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management? And the only thing I can respond to that is that the evidence that we have is that the state of Alaska is refusing to work with Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, not that they are somehow coordinating their response. Josh or Bob, does anyone have anything to add to that?
Well, Josh, if I could just jump in, I mean, you know, the state government of Alaska is prioritizing oil and gas development over virtually everything else. They think we're going to get back to the heydays of, you know, the 1980s when we had 1 million gallons flowing through the pipeline and you know, we built up our permanent fund. All the economists that you look at say that's not going to happen anymore. So I think it's a mistake to think that we're going to somehow through Lower Cook Inlet we're going to be able to do this. And you know, it's indicative there's a lawsuit going on right now from youth around the state, kids around the state that are suing our government because the government is not only being a neutral arbiter in the debate around climate change, they're actively aggravating it. And we saw that the other day when the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, a state-owned corporation, bid on the leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because none of the large oil companies thought it made economic sense to do so. So here's our state, you know, basically trying to revive that goose that lays the golden egg when the goose is gone, and we're making a turn towards renewable energy across the globe, and Alaska should be leading that effort. And that's why we think the other mandate for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is not just oil and gas, it's to develop renewable energy resources in our federal waters. And that's the direction we think that BOEM should go, and that's where I think they can go under the executive orders we're seeing coming out of the Biden administration.
Okay, and thanks so much for that, Bob. It's time to move on to what the strategies are for addressing this problem. And Robert Ruffner and also Dave Martin all suggested, talked about legislative paths. Does, for instance, Cook Inlet Keeper, do they follow the legislature? Do they lobby for in support of these bills? And KBBI will be following along as action in the legislature develops. Also, if and when the Department of Natural Resources has people in place to answer the questions that I've asked them, I will absolutely record those and make them news stories in order to get the questions answered and to get the perspective of the state. It's been quite difficult at this so far to get any information from the state on it. But I do want to know if Bob Shavelson and Dave Martin, if you think that there are legislative paths to fixing this. For instance, let's start with Dave. Dave, are you in contact? Dave Martin, are you in contact with Representative Vance's office to represent USITA?
We correspond with Representative Vance and some of the fishermen down in the Homer area. Talk to her quite often. Legislative bill that she's got is one part of it. It's going to take the court action to put the legality into how this fisheries is going to be managed. There's laws that the state needs to comply with if they're going to manage. If they're not, then the federal government will manage. But that's one thing I want to make clear too. Is USITA has always supported the state of Alaska managing the salmon resource, but under the guidelines of the law, which is the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is the champion legislation of Senator Ted Stevens. I mean, we're naming the airport after him. We have a bill to manage our fisheries after him. His champion legislation. I would like to say you brought the burros into it, and it's good to see people getting woken up kind of on this issue, because this has been a slowly manipulated effort to close the fisheries in Cook Inlet. The Matsu Burro, they put in $60,000 every year to the Matsu Fish and Wildlife Commission to lobby the legislature and the Board of Fish to close the inlet, the commercial fishery in the middle of the inlet. They're pretty much doing it. Governor Dunleavy campaigned on that. Vote for me and I'll put more fish in the Sioux City drainage. So, yeah, this is turned into a completely political allocation type management. And we're down to like three processors now. Quite a few of the fishermen have left. The young fishermen can't get into the fishery. And it's not from lack of fish. There's plenty of fish from everybody, for everybody to manage it right and harvest the surplus. So I think we need the support from everybody, not only on the legislative side of it, but to help the industries that are trying to resolve this whole fishery and support them. So,
thanks.
Thank you.
That's Dave Martin, president of Upper Cook Inlet Drift Association. Bob Shavelson, and then I'm going to bring Josh in as well. But first, to let people know, we're wrapping up. We've got about 10 minutes left in this show, which means it's last call in the next couple of minutes. If you want to call in to make a comment or ask a question, the time has to be now, because I don't take calls when we're 5 minutes away from the end of the show. But Bob Shavelson, what about challenges through the judicial system?
Are we talking about the fishing or the oil and gas?
Oil and gas. Let's start with oil and gas.
Well, certainly that's an option, and that's far down the road. We're hoping that the Biden administration, and recognizing the realities of climate change and how unique the impacts are in Alaska, will understand that Lower Cook Inlet should not be held out for more oil and gas leasing. A number of years ago, you saw people in communities and fishermen in Bristol Bay stand up and say, hey, you know, heavy industry, offshore oil and gas development does not make sense. It's not compatible with the fishery in Bristol Bay. And as a result of that, you saw the federal government withdraw the area in Bristol Bay, those federal waters in Bristol Bay, from future oil and gas leasing. And we think that Cook Inlet should certainly be in that same range, and that we shouldn't be going down the path of non-renewable resource development that's going to aggravate climate change that's already impacting the Gulf of Alaska fisheries that we see today.
Okay, thanks. That's Bob Shavelson from Cook Inlet Keeper. Josh Wisniewski, fisherman from Seldovia. How is it that, how do you get your information to keep up with what's going on? And do you pursue lobbying the legislature or participating in judicial challenges? Are any of those avenues open to you?
Like Bob said, you know, a decision hasn't been made yet, so I think that that would have to happen prior to legal actions. But certainly just tracking all the issues where it's available, with the EIS, the comment periods, you know, the website lists all the days that people can submit testimony and when they need to submit their comments by. You can review the EIS. And one of the things I've done is review the earlier EISs, particularly for what was lease sale 149 in the mid-1990s. And for perspective, that lease sale, the EIS indicated that there was a between a 27 and a 72% probability of a large spill event taking place from oil development. And that large spill event would have been upwards to 55,000 barrels, which is over 2 million gallons. So with an EIS only being prepared in 3 months and earlier EISs for lease sales in these same waters showing such a high probability for a spill event, I think it's important for fishermen to take advantage of all of those opportunities to participate, but also collectively for us to come together and seek to do the same, get the same result that Bristol Bay fishermen were able to get, and lobby for a withdrawal of the Cook Inlet lease area from future lease sales, simply because any type of oil and gas development here puts really all the risk on our local tourist economy, or all sectors of our local fishing economy. And simply, it's just wrong to have all of our local businesses and residents carry all the risk from this action.
Thanks. That's Josh Wisniewski, fisherman from Seldovia. Thanks for being on this morning. Is there anything you feel like has gone unsaid? It's time for final comments.
Bob, do you want to finish with anything?
Yeah, here comes Bob.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is taking comments until March 1st, but we would encourage folks to go to our website, inletkeeper.org. There's an opportunity to sign a petition, and we're gonna send that higher up in the administration so they understand that there's a lot of people in the lower inlet region that believe that sustainable economies and fishing and tourism, and those are the things that define who we are, and we want to keep this place wild, and we don't think heavy industry has a place down here. So go to inletkeeper.org and you can engage there.
Okay, and Dave Martin, president of Upper Cook Inlet Drift Association, any final comments for you, or do you feel like there's anything you called in to say that we didn't get to?
there's a lot to say. You see, we've been active in this for decades, and you know, last 10 years have been pretty much a daily, you know, operation. You made a comment that you leaned out to the governor for a response and didn't get any. We don't get any responses either. I know other industries don't. So, you see, this filed an economic disaster from our fishery there in 2018, 2020. We didn't even get a response from the governor that he received our declaration for a disaster. That's pretty sad when you've got a governor that's picking and choosing who can be viable in this state and who can't.
I want to clarify that. So as an organization, you made the formal file for a disaster declaration and submitted it to the state and did not even receive a response?
Correct, both in 2018 and 2020 season. So Yep, that is correct. Okay. It's an economic disaster, not a.
I see. All right. Well, thanks. That is Dave Martin, president of Upper Cook Inlet Drift Association, and Bob Shavelson from Cook Inlet Keeper, and Josh Wisniewski, who is a fisherman based out of Seldovia. Also, thanks to Robert Ruffner, who could not be here in person today, but recorded his interview yesterday. And there is one final comment. Nancy comments through our phone lines. The stakeholder that is not being considered in all this is the fish. And so thanks especially to Dave for talking about the business of fishing and how this will affect all our community. This discussion is certainly not over. It's just getting started. Bob, before we go, can you remind people about the comment period for the oil and gas leases, lease sale 258?
Sure. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is taking comments until March 1st. But again, you know, thousands and thousands of people have submitted comments to BOEM and said they don't think it's a good idea, and they continue to roll through those. So, we're encouraging folks to sign on to the petition that we've got at inletkeeper.org and to go around BOEM, because hopefully the new administration and their policies will filter down to the Anchorage office, but they have not yet. So we expect BOEM to continue to be an arm of the oil industry for the foreseeable future, and we want to go around them and make sure that the new administration hears from people in Lower Cook Inlet.
Okay, thanks to Bob Shavelson, Josh Wisniewski, and Dave Martin. I'm Kathleen Gustafson, and this has been The Coffee Table. Later this afternoon, you'll be able to hear a lightly edited version of this show on kbbi.org, and we will share it out to our platforms. Thanks for listening, Kachemak Bay.